Welcome to the deep dive. You've probably interacted with dozens, maybe hundreds of databases just today.
Oh, easily. Without even realizing it.
Exactly. From checking your bank balance, scrolling through social media. They're everywhere. The invisible backbone, really, of our digital world.
That's a good way to put it.
So today we're taking a deep dive into the systems that make all that possible. Database management systems, you'll hear DBMS a lot.
Right.
Our mission here is to unpack the core concepts of DBMS. We're drawing insights from excerpts from database management systems, concepts, and components.
A foundational text.
Yeah, exactly. We want to give you that shortcut, you know,
a
real understanding of what this technology is, how it works, and why it's just so critical in, well, pretty much every digital sphere.
And it really is incredibly fundamental. I mean, whether you're running a business and need customer insights, or you're a scientist managing huge data sets.
Or just curious about your apps.
Or just curious, yeah. Grasping how data is organized, how it's retrieved, it's genuinely powerful.
Right.
A good DBMS makes massive amounts of information, not just like accessible, but secure and accurate. That's key.
Okay, so let's start right there. You hear database and DBMS thrown around, sometimes almost interchangeably.
Mm-hmm.
Can you break that down? What actually is a database, just at its simplest? And then what does the DBMS do with it?
Sure. So a database fundamentally, it's just a collection of data, usually structured data.
Like a digital filing cabinet.
Sort of, yeah. A highly organized one.
Right.
Now, the DBMS, that's the software. It's the system that acts as the, let's say, librarian, the cataloger, the security for that library.
Okay.
It's specifically built for storage, retrieval, and just the overall management of those databases.
And we see these all the time.
Constantly, even if you don't know the names. Things like MySQL, Oracle, SQLite, IBM's DB2. Those are all examples of DBMS software.
So why the extra layer? Why bother with a whole complex DBMS instead of, I don't know, just using spreadsheets or simple files? What's the big win?
Ah, the advantages are, well, they're huge. Really transformative. First off, a DBMS is fantastic at controlling data redundancy.
Meaning fewer copies of the same thing.
Exactly. It drastically cuts down on duplicate data floating around your system. Think about a bank.
Hmm.
You can't have your balance showing one thing on the app, another at the ATM.
Chaos.
Total chaos.
Yeah.
A DBMS helps prevent that. It makes sure data is stored efficiently, ideally just once.
And I guess that leads right into the next benefit.
It does, directly. When you control that redundancy, you inherently get better data consistency.
Right, because there aren't multiple versions to get out of sync.
Precisely. And that consistency underpins data integrity, making sure the data is actually correct, reliable. You have to be able to trust the information, really.
Absolutely.
Another massive one is data security. A DBMS gives you strong tools to protect sensitive info. You can control who sees what, who can change what. Think financial details, health records.
Super important. So it's not just stopping duplicates, it's building trust and safety.
Exactly. And beyond that, it makes sharing data way easier. Multiple users, different departments, they can all access the data they need securely.
Essential for collaboration.
Totally. Plus, you get efficient data access, meaning it's fast. Retrieving information, even from huge data sets, is quick and, crucially, crash recovery.
Ah, what happens if the system goes down?
Well, a good DBMS has mechanisms to recover the data, to restore it from failures, vital for any serious operation. And finally, it helps enforce standards, making sure data follows certain rules, keeping it clean and usable.
Wow.
What's really cool is how these advantages build on each other. It's not just storage. It's about making data trustworthy, secure, and actually useful.
That's a powerful package. Okay, so if the DBMS is this sophisticated brain doing all this,
right?
What are its basic parts? What are the components inside that make it tick?
Good question. The source breaks it down into a few key elements working together. First, you've got the hardware.
The physical stuff.
Right. Servers, storage drives, networks, where the data actually lives and gets moved around. Then there's the software.
The DBMS itself.
Yep. That's the interface between users or applications and the raw data. And then, obviously, the data. That's the core asset being managed.
Makes sense.
We also have procedures. These are like the instruction manuals, the rules for how to do specific tasks within the system, backups, updates, things like that.
And the people, the users, how do they fit in?
Ah, yes, the users are critical. The source lists four main types. First, the database administrator or DBA.
The person in charge.
Pretty much. They have full control.
Yeah.
Designing the database structure, managing security, handling backups and recovery. They're the guardians.
Okay.
Next are application programmers. These are the developers building the software, the apps. that talk to the database.
Got it.
Then you have sophisticated users. Think engineers, scientists, business analysts.
Yeah.
People who might query the data directly, do complex analysis.
They need more direct access.
Right. And finally, naive users. That's most of us, most of the time. Mm-hmm. Checking your bank balance online, posting on social media.
You just use the app. You don't see the database behind it.
Exactly. We're not concerned with the DBMS details, just the end result.
Okay, that leads perfectly to my next question. If there's all this complexity underneath, the hardware, the software, the procedures, how does a naive user or even an application programmer not just get totally lost?
Yeah, how do they manage?
How does the DBMS simplify things for different people?
That is precisely where data abstraction comes in. It's defined as a process of hiding unwanted or irrelevant details from the end user.
Hiding the messy parts?
Kind of. Think about driving a car. You use the steering wheel, pedals, dashboard. You don't need to understand every single part of the engine, right?
Definitely not.
The car abstracts away that complexity. A DBMS does the same thing with data. It presents different views depending on who you are.
Okay, so different levels of detail.
Exactly. The source talks about three main levels of abstraction. At the bottom, the most technical, is the physical level. This describes how the data is actually physically stored, the bits and bytes on the disk drives.
Super low level.
Very. Above that is the logical level. This describes what data is stored in the database and what relationships exist between that data. This is more like the blueprint that a designer or programmer works with.
More conceptual.
Right. And then at the top, you have the view level. This defines only a part of the whole database, tailored for specific users or applications. A naive user interacting with a web form, they're probably just seeing a specific view.
So they only see what they need to see.
Precisely. It shields them from the full complexity underneath.
So these layers, it sounds like changing something deep down, like at the physical level, shouldn't break things higher up.
You've hit on a really crucial concept, data independence.
Mm-hmm.
That's the ability to modify the database schema, the structure, without necessarily messing up the programs and applications that rely on it.
Oh, okay.
And there are two types. Physical data independence means you can change the physical storage, maybe move to faster disks, change file organization, without affecting the logical level or the apps.
So the programmers don't have to rewrite their code just because you bought new hard drives.
Exactly. And then there's logical data independence. This means you can change the logical structure, maybe add a new column to a table, combine two tables, without breaking the existing views or applications, at least the ones that don't directly use the new stuff.
That seems incredibly important for flexibility.
It's huge.
Yeah.
Imagine if every time you reorganize files on your computer, like every single program that ever touched those files just stopped working.
Nightmare.
Right. Data independence prevents that kind of cascade failure in databases. It lets them evolve.
That concept of hiding complexity, abstraction, independence, it really is clever. So how does this play out in the most common type of database we usually encounter, the relational one?
Ah, yes.
People often say database when they really mean relational database, right?
Mm-hmm.
So what exactly is an RDBMS and why is it, you know, everywhere?
Good question. RDBMS stands for Relational Database Management System. Specific type, yeah, and easily the most dominant type, especially for structured data like business records, customer info, that kind of thing. Its defining feature is that it organizes data into tables, two-dimensional tables like spreadsheets, but way more powerful. These tables are formally called relations.
Rows and columns.
Rows and columns, exactly. And this structure is fantastic for representing relationships between different pieces of data, like linking a customer to their orders.
And the big names are RDBMS.
Oh, yeah. Oracle, Microsoft SQL Server, MySQL, PostgreSQL, DB2. These are all major players in the RDBMS world.
Okay, this is where it gets really specific, I'll think. RDBMS has its own language, its own terminology.
It definitely does. A specific vocabulary.
Can you walk us through some of the absolute fundamentals, the key terms you need to know?
Let's do it. Understanding these is crucial for grasping how RDBMS works. First up, an entity.
Yeah.
It's basically any distinguishable object or concept in the real world you want to store data about. A customer, a product, an employee, an order.
A thing.
A thing, exactly. Then you have a relation, which is the formal name for a table. This is where you store the data about a specific type of entity organized in rows and columns.
So a customer table, a product table.
Perfect. Now, each row in that table is called a tuple. It represents one specific instance of the entity. So one row in the customer table is one specific customer.
Tuple. Got it. Like a record.
Yep. Record is a common synonym. The columns in the table are called attributes. These are the properties or characteristics of the entity. For a customer, attributes might be name, address, email.
The pieces of information about the entity.
Exactly. Now, two quick ones related to the table size. The degree is just the number of attributes or columns in the table.
How wide the table is.
Right. And cardinality is the number of tuples or rows.
How many records are in it.
Correct. Then there's the domain. This is important. It's the set of permissible values for a specific attribute. Think of it as a rule for what can go in a column. Like an order statuses column might have a domain of pending, shipped, delivered, canceled.
So it enforces valid data.
Precisely. It helps maintain data integrity. Then the schema. That's the overall design or structure of the database. It defines the tables, the columns in each table, the data types, the relationships. It's the blueprint.
The master plan.
You got it. And finally, an instance. This refers to the actual data contained in the database at a particular point in time. The schema is the structure. The instance is the data in that structure right now.
Like a snapshot.
A snapshot is a great way to think about it.
Okay, that paints a clear picture of the structure. But with all these tables and rows,
how
do you uniquely identify one specific row, like one specific customer out of thousands? That's where keys come in, isn't it?
Absolutely critical. Keys are fundamental in our DBMS. A key is essentially an attribute, or sometimes a set of attributes combined, that uniquely identifies each tupper, each row, within a table. No two rows can have the same key value.
The unique ID.
Exactly. Now, there are a few types. A candidate key is any attribute or minimal set of attributes that could serve as the unique identifier for a row. A table might actually have more than one potential candidate key.
Okay, so options.
Options, yes. From those options, the database designer chooses one candidate key to be the primary key. That's the main, official, unique identifier for rows in that specific table. It cannot be null. It must be unique.
The chosen one.
The chosen one. Mm-hmm. Any other candidate keys that weren't chosen as the primary key are called alternate keys. They could have done the job, but they weren't picked.
Okay.
And then very importantly, there's the foreign key. This is an attribute or set of attributes in one table whose value is required to match the value of the primary key in some other table.
Ah, so that's how you link tables together.
That is exactly how you establish and enforce relationships between tables. If you have an orders table, you likely have a customer ID column that's a foreign key referencing the primary key of the customer's table. That links each order to the specific customer who placed it.
Makes perfect sense. That's how you connect the dots.
Foreign keys are the glue holding the relational model together.
All right, so we have the structure, the terms, the keys for identifying and linking things. Now, what can you actually do with these relational databases? What are the fundamental actions, the operations for getting information out and manipulating it?
Right, the core operations. These are the building blocks for almost any query you'd run against an RDBMS. The source mentions several key ones, often represented by Greek letters in formal relational algebra.
Okay.
First is select, often shown as sigma. This operation chooses specific rows, tuples, from a table that meet a certain condition. Like, select all customers where city equals London.
Filtering the rows.
Exactly. Then there's project, represented by pi. This selects specific columns attributes from a table, essentially creating a new narrower table with only the columns you want. Like project, just the name and email columns from the customer table.
Filtering the columns.
You got it. Then we have set operations. Union, U, combines all the rows from two compatible tables into one, removing any duplicate rows.
Merging two lists.
Yep. Intersection. Gives you only the rows that appear in both the two tables.
Finding the overlap.
Right. Set difference. Gives you the rows that are in the first table but not in the second.
Finding what's unique to the first list.
Correct. And finally, the Cartesian product, X. This one combines every row from the first table with every row from the second table. It generates all possible pairs.
Sounds like it could get big fast.
It can get massive. It's usually used as an intermediate step in more complex operations like joins, which combine related data from multiple tables based on keys.
It's really something to think that these basic actions, select rows, select columns, combine sets, are the foundation for answering really complex questions from potentially huge amounts of data.
Absolutely. It really raises an important point, doesn't it? If you understand these fundamental building blocks, these operations, you start to see just how flexible and powerful a well-designed RDBMS can be. It's not just about storing stuff anymore. It's about dynamically generating insights.
So wrapping this up, what does this all mean for you, the listener? We've taken quite a journey today, from the basic idea of a database.
Just a collection of data.
To the DBMS, managing it, its components,
yeah.
The cleverness of abstraction, hiding complexity.
Those levels, physical, logical view.
And then digging into the specifics of relational databases, the terminology, the keys, those core operations, select, project.
Union, intersection.
Yeah.
The whole set.
It really highlights how DBMS underpins so much of our digital lives, from the simplest app interaction to, you know, massive global systems we all rely on.
It really does. And maybe here's something to think about. The next time you use an app, check your online bank or browse a website, pause for a second. You're not just looking at data presented nicely.
Right.
You're interacting with the end result of a really powerful, carefully managed database system working behind the scenes. Using things like keys, abstraction, maybe performing those relational operations. How might understanding these concepts, even just the basics we covered, change how you think about the data you generate, the data you consume, and maybe even how you manage information in your own life, whether that's for work or even just personal stuff?
That's a great question to leave folks with. This deep dive really underscores how fundamental organizing information is. We hope this gave you a clearer view of that digital backbone. Thanks for joining us on the deep dive.